From Hermitage to Shamokin, Mount Pleasant to Tyrone, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Josh Shapiro's breaking of a budget deal with state Senate Republicans has left the Commonwealth without a budget, likely for several months. What happens next? For the answer, David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Stephen Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation have a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion with House Republican Appropriations Chairman Seth Grove. And when the left can't win by the rules, they change the rules. Their latest target, the U.S. Supreme Court. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania Turnpike travelers will once again have to dig deeper into their wallets in 2024. Effective in January, yet another toll hike will take effect. Fares will go up by 5%. EasyPass customers will continue to pay less to drive on the nation's first superhighway than those who pay toll by plate. Given the Turnpike's massive debt and the continued siphoning of toll revenue to other transportation agencies, the annual toll hikes will continue for the foreseeable future. A rose by any other name is still a rose, yet proponents of a severance tax on natural gas drilled in Pennsylvania are once again pushing for an additional levy on the resource. The state has levied an impact fee on natural gas production for many years, and that fee pumps hundreds of millions of dollars into state, county, and municipal coffers. State House Democrats, though, recently passed a resolution to study impact fees and severance taxes in gas-producing states, with an eye toward skimming even more revenue from natural gas producers. State Representative Brett Miller, a Lancaster County Republican, has introduced legislation that would abolish the per diem or daily payments lawmakers get when on state business and instead require legislators to provide receipts. Currently, State House members are not required to provide receipts and simply get a daily expense allowance. And the Treasury Department is slashing fees on the state's education savings program. State Treasurer Stacy Garrity said the fee reduction for those enrolled in the state's 529 investment plan will save over $500,000 as a result of the fee reduction. The 528 investment plan is a vehicle for parents and others to save for students' higher education expenses. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Josh Shapiro has triggered a state budget impasse by breaking a deal with Senate Republicans that has left the Commonwealth without a budget. Both houses of the state legislature have adjourned until late September, so no quick resolution is in sight. To find out what happens next, David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Stephen Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation are joined for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion by State Representative Seth Grove of York County, who serves as the Republican Appropriations Chairman. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to be with you.
David, delighted to be here with you.
Well, and as ever, you know, we do the best that we can to cut through the clutter and try to understand, the ongoing spectacle of Pennsylvania state government. And it's been a little more weird and wild, interesting. And to help us to navigate those choppy waters, I'm so glad to welcome our special guest, State Representative Seth Grove of York County, the Republican chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. Seth, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, gentlemen. Great to be with you. It is an honor and a pleasure to join day 19, hour 16, minute 22 onto the budget impasse of Pennsylvania, as long as you're not a budget impasse denier.
So let's, Representative, if you would, like, try to outline for the listeners here exactly where we are at this point in time. The end of the fiscal year was June 30. We were supposed to have enacted a general fund budget for the upcoming fiscal year, the 23-24 fiscal year, which we are now in. And so do we or do we not have a budget?
Yeah, so we do not have a budget. There is no budget general appropriations bill that has been signed into law. So we are at an impasse currently. And it's a very weird situation because there is a budget that did pass the Senate. There is a budget that did pass the House. But there is a provision in law that requires a bill to be signed by the House and the Senate. Signed by the House has not been signed by the Senate. Actually, it's still in the House under lock and key. We have a gentleman that's in charge of maintaining control of all bills before they kind of cross chamber and stuff like that. So that's where we're at in the process. And there's a specific reason in there because Governor Josh Shapiro cut a deal with the Senate Republicans to include school vouchers as part of the budget process.
Right. Lifeline scholarships for the kids in the worst performing schools.
Correct. That bill passed by a bipartisan vote in the Senate, went to the House. The majority leader of the House, Matt Bradford, refused to bring it up for a vote. His caucus is, I can't say all the caucus, because supposedly there's a number of Democrats that support vouchers, particularly in the Philadelphia urban setting. He refused to bring it up. So Josh reneged on his deal with the Senate, said he will line item veto the school vouchers. And, you know, it's agreement. The Senate agreed to higher spending than what they wanted to agree to the governor getting this done. And it's something he went out there and supported
right
during the campaign. And before then, he supported school vouchers. He reneged on his deal. The House Democrats passed that. And the Senate basically left town and refused to come back until there's a final budget agreement because this is not what they agreed to when they voted for it.
And that's the thing.
So it was a big double cross.
And it's okay. So if the House, you know, you've got Leader Bradford, he says, I don't have the votes. I don't want to bring it up. It's not going to pass. Well, at that point, you have to start over, right? You have to renegotiate.
Right.
But instead, that the what Governor Shapiro did on Bradford's behalf is, okay, I'm going to cut out the one thing that the Senate majority wanted, but will leave in place all the things that they gave up as concessions to get that thing that they're now not going to get. And right. And like that's not how negotiations work. It's like, no, there are trade-offs. And so like, well, if we don't get our thing, then you don't get your thing.
That's normally how it works.
Right.
But apparently in Pennsylvania, your word is no good. And that's the big problem with this entire process. How does the Senate work with the governor that betrayed them moving forward, right?
Yeah.
Even the House Democrats or even anyone, how does anybody trust what the governor says in that handshake deal is going to be, in fact, the final deal? And they don't, and he doesn't go back on his word, right?
And it's early innings. I mean, this is not the last budget. This is the first budget. He's going to have at least three more. And so, you know, I mean, it really stings because he was the one who came in talking about goodwill and common ground and that the game is going to be played between the 40-yard lines and all that kind of stuff. And now none of that's going to happen.
It's really setting a difficult tone to the start of, as you correctly note, what's going to be a cycle of at least three more budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, if you've, you know, I had the privilege of serving in the legislature and Chairman Grove and I actually sat next to each other in the House, and we all saw that how important those handshake deals are. They don't sign contracts when legislative leaders agree to a complex deal like a Pennsylvania budget package. It's based on your word and your handshake.
Right.
And that's how it can only proceed that way. There's not a lawyer standing there to jot it all down and turn it into a contract that everybody signs with penalty clauses and so forth. The penalty for violating that handshake deal is that nobody trusts you and your influence wanes because who's going to follow a guy who's lying to them?
And that's the short-term strategy in this, right? He felt he was stuck with the House Democrats, cut a deal with them to, you know, clear off and get a budget done without massive implications, and it completely backfired even in a worse tone, because there's instead of getting a budget done with bipartisan work and trust and camaraderie to help you facilitate the next budget, right? It's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
While he got what he wanted, a budget came out of the House, he eroded any relationship he had with the Senate. And then he doubled down and did a press conference and blamed everybody else.
Yeah, that was also very striking.
And he's the governor, and yet he's passing the buck to the House and Senate leaders and says, you guys have to work this out. He's the head of his party. He is the most influential individual in the budget negotiation process, and he has basically punted that duty to the House majority leader, who nobody across the state voted for. Only people in his district know him.
Yeah.
And here's this guy, Matt Bradford, that no one's ever heard of, deciding the important process that should be being run by the governor. And Dave, you mentioned that we had some recent statistical polling that we've done at Commonwealth Foundation.
Yeah.
And we
does that show?
That exact question came up. So the question, are voters looking for Governor Shapiro to be the leader in this budget process? Literally, overwhelmingly, the voters are looking to Governor Shapiro to lead. They view him as ultimately responsible for finalizing the state budget. 55% of voters say that, compared to 14% say the Republicans in the state legislature, 8% say the Democrats. But it's the governor's job.
Right.
People get that. And they want more than 9 in 10 voters, 93%, say it's important for leaders to achieve a bipartisan budget agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the things sitting on the table. That's what the voters of Pennsylvania want. And now, instead, we're in day, what day did you say it is, Seth? Day 19?
Day 19, yep.
Of this impasse.
When the governor did his press conference, he basically said this was a failure of the legislative body, right? This is not the first time I've heard. This is the typical governor wolf, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he didn't want involved, it's the General Assembly's fault.
Mm-hmm.
If governors don't want to do their job and don't want to be part of the legislative process anymore, let's just get rid of the veto. Let's get rid of the presentment altogether and say when a bill passes the House, a bill passes the Senate, it is automatically law. The job of the executive branch is to execute the laws, right?
Correct.
As a check and balance by our forefathers, they were given the ability to have a veto and have presentment, correct?
Correct.
Present bills to sign it.
Yeah.
That was part of a checks and balance on the General Assembly. If they don't want to do their job, let's just remove them. Part of this is on Matt Bradford as well. He has a one-person majority, which means half of the entire state is being ignored by the majority party.
Yeah.
He wants to go it alone with his extremist, Democrat, liberal, woke policies. And you see what happens in Philadelphia. Philadelphia elected a mayor that wants to undo a lot of the Krasner woke policies in criminal justice because it failed.
Mm-hmm.
In Pittsburgh's side, you have them electing a very woke a county executive and a city council that is going to go the way Philadelphia has. Those are not the policies generally Pennsylvanians want to see. So how do you get to compromise when Matt Bradford wants to just have 102 Democrat votes?
Yeah.
You can't get to that bipartisan solution.
Yeah.
You have to include House Republicans.
You're listening to Capitol Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation, and our special guest, State Representative Seth Grove of York County, the House Republican Appropriations Chairman.
And Dave, I'd like to just get into a few more of the questions that we asked in our recent scientific survey that Commonwealth Foundation did, bipartisan sample, accurately representing the likely voters in Pennsylvania. The voters of Pennsylvania want Governor Shapiro to keep his promise that he would support funding for scholarships for children attending the state's worst performing schools. In other words, the Lifeline scholarships for kids trapped in the bottom 15% lowest performing schools in our state. And especially interesting to me here is that of those saying that the governor should support the scholarships, it's driven by African-American voters at 76% approval for that idea. Mm. Urban voters at 65% of that idea, and parents at 62% in support of that idea. So extremely popular with individuals in minority areas, urban areas, and parents of kids today.
And you'd expect that there's a lot of overlap there, that you know, it's a tragedy and it's appalling, but that many of our worst schools are the urban schools.
Right. This is to save those kids caught in those schools. two-thirds of voters, just short of two-thirds, 65%, agree that Governor Shapiro should honor the deal he made and fund the scholarships for children attending those bottom 15% of schools. That's 63% to 69% across all key demographics that we polled. So here you have this very strong bipartisan support for school choice, and in particular for the Lifeline Scholarship Program. Yes. Expanding EITC, OSTC, which was also part of the deal that the governor blew up at the last minute by saying he was going to blue line or line item veto Lifeline Scholarships. 77% of Pennsylvania's voters support expanding the tax credit scholarship programs. 73% support Lifeline, especially the Lifeline Scholarship, which is also renamed the PASS Scholarship in the legislation that the Senate tried to craft to match exactly what Governor Shapiro asked for.
Yeah.
And then expanding charter school access, 73% support. So there you have, across the board, the primary forms of school choice, of educational opportunity in Pennsylvania, strongly supported by the voters, overwhelmingly supported.
And it's also frustrating because this program, the PASS or Lifeline Scholarships, is $100 million out of a $45 billion general fund appropriation. So that's one in 450.
0.2%. Yes. 0.2%.
Yes.
I mean, that's the funny, like, this entire impasse is because Democrats don't want to spend 0.2% of the budget. The people that passed the bill that spent billions more than what Josh Shapiro did are complaining about $100 million, 0.2% of the budget.
And oh, by the way, if he in fact vetoes that line, it doesn't go automatically over to public school funding. It's locked up. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't help anyone. And the public schools don't get more funding.
But Chairman Grove, I guess the most important question here is, well, what happens next? Where do we go from here?
There are options on the table for the Senate to act. So they got to figure out what they want to do. Now, the House isn't coming back in because the House Democrats forced a single mom to resign her job and not collect pay because they want to maintain power and control. So they forced that to happen today. They didn't schedule session until the end of September to make sure they can have their special session. So we're not coming back in because there's no way the House Democrats are going to go to the House floor for 101-101.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably won't see any resolution, any budget because of the House Democrats and their games until October.
So what happens for state agencies and other, other Pennsylvania government entities whose funding depends on enactment of the budget?
Some things will get released. So if employees show up for work, you have to pay them. That was a court case, right?
Right.
So entitlement programs, federal entitlement programs have to be paid. The tricky part is health, welfare, and safety of the Commonwealth. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
I would say it means corrections, right? Because you can't have cruel and unusual punishment. So
right.
if you keep prisoners in jail and not feed them, cruel and unusual punishment, right?
Yes.
So you have to maintain your correct. But there's other stuff that I would question. So state police, I would say they would need funded, but do they need a new helicopter right now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? That's questionable. States, I would argue that if state agencies are asking for new pencils, that gets subsided.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Those kind of things need to stop. Out-of-state travel, conferences, anything like that that's taxpayer-funded should be shut down. You're staying here, zoom it in, right?
Yeah.
So there should be a curbing of spending. Luckily, we have a great treasurer who has the transparency portal, and look under Ledger 5, all the stopgap budgets there, so we can start monitoring how agencies are spending money. And we should see a curtailing of funding moving forward to make sure only the basic needs are met. So schools aren't going to get funding. Counties, nonprofits aren't going to get funding. Schools will be good to go until later.
Right. The Penn State and Pitt and Temple and Lincoln, the so-called non-preferreds, that appropriation also has not been approved.
Correct. And that's one we've been fighting and holding up because we wouldn't want to see freezes for students, tuition freeze for students. We want to see them under the state's right to know law. So we have openness, transparency, and accountability, and we would like to see the funding follow the student.
Yes,
on those. And we just had a huge report by Spotlight about Penn State's ethics and how the right to know law would have made a tremendous impact to help those students. So we're definitely right on the issues. The House Republican caucuses are leading from the front and really trying to engage this budget process from a very narrow majority or minority position and try to bring some adult thoughts into this process.
Yes. And you know, Mr. Chairman, this is actually your first go round in the appropriations seat, and it's been a pretty wild ride. But certainly, all of us pro taxpayer types are grateful that you're there on the job, overseeing all this stuff.
And, you know, as I said, I had the opportunity to actually sit beside Seth for a session or two in the legislature. There's nobody who understands Pennsylvania's budget and where the money comes from, where the money goes, better than Seth Grove. So that's something that we can be glad about, is having an individual like Chairman Grove who really gets it, who's hands-on. He doesn't just rely on his staff to get things right.
Yeah.
He himself understands these issues and how we can overcome the problems we're facing.
Yeah, you're a real difference maker, Seth, and we're grateful for that.
I appreciate that. Some would say it's an illness. I like to read foreign documents, but I'm going to do it, I guess.
Well, as we're winding down here to the last seconds, where can folks go to learn more about you and your office and the work that you're doing?
PABudget.com is the House Appropriations Committee. It's chock full of information. There is a live budget impasse clock clicking up. We're probably going to get into October, like 4 months into the budget process. So I expect some big numbers moving forward on that clock. You can look at all the budget documents. We have them listed there. Budget hearing, wrap-ups, press releases and stuff are all there. PABudget.com. And then my website's repgrove.com. And I'm pretty active on Twitter. Had a very fun morning this morning on Twitter. So you can catch me up on Twitter, Facebook.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. Yeah. And as we say goodbye here, Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the work that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org. And in fact, a lot of that polling information I talked about, more details on our website.
Excellent. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Steve and me, special thanks to our friend Representative Seth Grove. And thanks to all of you for listening. We will catch you next time on Capitol Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. It is axiomatic that when the left cannot win by the rules, it finds a way to change the rules. That is evident by the wide range of changes to election laws made during the 2020 presidential election cycle. But while producing more Democratic victories, those changes have destroyed voter confidence in our electoral system. A recent Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll found only 22% of Republicans have high confidence that votes in the upcoming U.S. presidential election will be counted accurately. Just prior to the 2022 U.S. Senate election in Pennsylvania, a seat which determined control of the upper chamber, a poll by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research found an astounding 75% of business owners and CEOs were very or somewhat concerned that the election would be fair and accurate. The Supreme Court of the United States, remade with the appointment of 3 Trump administration justices, has for the most part abandoned the judicial activism of the past in favor of doing what the court is supposed to do, interpret and apply the Constitution to the cases brought before it. In its recently concluded session, the High Court struck down so-called affirmative action, which discriminated based on race, upheld the free speech rights of a web designer who objected to being forced to create sites which violated her personal beliefs, and in a rare unanimous ruling, it upheld the religious rights of a former postal worker who was forced out of his job for refusing to work on Sundays. It should be noted the court also issued rulings relative to congressional redistricting and the power of state courts in the redistricting process, which negatively impacted Republican efforts in those areas. In each case, the court majority based its rulings on constitutional principles. As a result of all this, the left unleashed a torrent of attacks on the Supreme Court and renewed calls for expanding the number of justices, thus enabling President Joe Biden to pack the bench. With Republicans in control of the U.S. House of Representatives, such calls are unlikely to result in an actual change. But once again, when the left doesn't get what it wants, the go-to tactic, change the rules. In the wake of those recent decisions, a post appeared in my Facebook feed. The individual making the post decried the Supreme Court's rulings and plaintively asked, quote, "Why are we letting a dusty old document written by a bunch of old white men preventing us from getting things done?" End quote. This thought process presages the left's deployment of its ultimate rule-changing gambit: destroy the primacy of the U.S. Constitution. Keeping in mind the goal of the left is to fundamentally transform the United States into a big government socialist nation, and it was only a matter of time before the Constitution, the goal of which was or is to limit government and protect individual rights, would come under assault. Setting aside the fact the Founding Fathers were not old white men, but rather youthful individuals in their 20s and early 30s, this animus toward the Constitution is proof positive that the brilliant document which underpins our entire system of government is working as intended. The Constitutional Convention was convened because the Articles of Confederation, the first attempt at binding together the 13 independent colonies, lacked both the structure and power to constitute an effective federal government. A great debate ensued as to how one United States could go about getting things done, while at the same time preventing the creation of an all-powerful government, the likes of which the colonies had just escaped. Seeking to form a more perfect union, the Constitution was submitted to the now 13 former colonies for ratification. That only happened when the document was strengthened with the addition of the first 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights. Those are the rights the Supreme Court is tasked with protecting and the rights that prevent the left from imposing socialism on the nation. It is that document that prevents the left from taking away our right to keep and bear arms. It is that document that allows a postal worker to be off work for Sunday worship. It is that document that protects a web designer from producing a product with which she disagrees. It is that document that protects prospective students from being rejected by universities based on racial quotas. Supreme Court justices, as does the President and every member of Congress, take an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. It is not a dusty old document. Rather, it is the enduring guardian of our rights and freedom. Fortunately, we have a Supreme Court which is doing just that. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WTKT-AM in Harrisburg, WLSH-AM in Langford, and WTYM-AM in Katanning, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.